Did I pronounce that right?
Welcome, but you were close.
Welcome. I love the last name though. So you got that going for you. Okay, so welcome to the Not Boring Business Podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Redman, founder of Air 5. This is not suits and handshakes business. This is not boring business. Let's go. Okay, so we were just talking outside of the recording about how you're having a busy November. We'll get into who you are and what you do, but tell us a little bit about your November.
Yeah, I'm excited. I have a lot of things coming up. I do a lot of speaking on leadership topics, and my November is packed. I get to go around the country, speak a lot to typically groups of high school students, and work with them, help motivate them, inspire them, build them up, help them become better leaders and hopefully better members of society as a whole.
Okay, so tell me this. So you run what? Like, is it webinar? It's seminars, right? Like,
yeah,
leadership
seminars? I do keynote speeches, run leadership workshops. I wrote 2 books. I have an online leadership course. So there's quite a few things in there.
Oh my gosh. So when I hear keynote, I think I've never given one of those. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Tell me, like, the entrance. How do I get into making my first keynote? Right? Like, it's probably you got to start small, right? I would think.
Yeah, definitely. And I think keynotes tend to be a little bit tailored to people who are natural storytellers, because those people who are gifted with that gift of gab, who can talk and tell a story about anything. A keynote is a story that tends to teach a great lesson, and the people who can tell great stories and intertwine those stories with good lessons, I feel like those are the people that become most successful. But telling the actual story or telling the keynote is only a piece of it, because I feel like getting started, you definitely have to put yourself out there and figure out where your market is, what your message is, who you're reaching, why you're reaching them. The actual 40 minutes or an hour that you're in front of people is just one small part.
Oh, that's so true. I think it all goes to preparation, right? Like, I think a lot of times, you know, you hear like Gary Vaynerchuk is doing this keynote, and part of me goes, well, that would be scary as fuck. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Getting in front of, you know, 10,000 people sometimes, like filling out an arena, right? Like, the preparation that goes into that. What have you ever, like, if I got on stage and I was like, dude, I'm going to do this 45-minute keynote and it's going to be great. I think the longest, technically, like, just telling my story, I guess, like, the more you know what you're talking about, the more comfortable you'll be.
Right. Well, right? Absolutely. I have seen Gary V speak live. I've met him in person, and he's one of those guys where his story or his preparation is basically his life. So
sure.
he's living it day in and day out. And so to get up for him and to tell some stories and to give some tips and to be emphatic about it and to tell people what they should be doing, you know, that's all very natural, because those are the things that he talks about day in and day out, and they're the things that he lives through his business day in and day out. For me, or someone who is an author and tends, you know, not so much to just every single day be on social media saying, this is what you should do, this is what you should do, this is what you should do, but someone who, you know, ruminates on some of these theories and these concepts of leadership and what makes great leaders and what are some of the qualities that when you build them out will really raise your leadership repertoire. You know, to build out the stories, I tend to be, I tend to rehearse them a little more than Gary V might. And I tend to really zone in on how I'm telling that story and making sure I'm engaging people in the right ways, so that all of the research I've done and all of the things that I've looked up and that I know in my head to be true don't just fall flat when I deliver the message.
Mm. So how much of that is knowing the crowd, right? Like tailoring your messaging for the audience versus like you're in the moment, you're audibling, and it's like a Q&A session, or you feel them reacting to something like as you're watching them, right? You're obviously watching the crowd and you're kind of engaged as well. How many times, if ever, do you call an audible while you're speaking? Because you're like, oh, fuck, this crowd doesn't like, right. They don't feel like they're into this. Maybe I should go into this path.
Absolutely. Well, and that's a huge, I tell people all the time, there are always senders and receivers in a communication relationship. And if you're communicating, you play both the role of the sender and the receiver. And I think people think when they're giving the keynote, when they're the man or the woman who's in front of the room, that they're the sender. And it's not necessarily true. They have to be taking cues from the audience as well. And if it's a large audience, you might still have a pre-rehearsed script that you follow. But you know, even using the cues that they've given you during your pre-rehearsed script to rewrite something for the next one, or to add on, or to take out, or to really like push and pull when your content is falling flat, you should know as a speaker, because you're not just the sender, you're also the receiver. And I think about that all the time. So there have been definitely times where the crowd has just responded to something that I've said in a loud and raucous, hilarious laughter. And I end up taking the next 5 minutes to just like be in it with them and just laugh and just, you know, discuss it. And so I think that it's great to have good content, but if your content isn't engaging or doesn't hit your audience in the right way, then you're missing the mark.
Like, so, okay, you mentioned people laughing. How much do you actually improvise the joking, right? Versus, because I don't think I write jokes well, right?
Like, right.
But I go, I want like some fucking, I want a punchline or something. You know what I mean? Like, I want something that sticks that I know will get a laugh here, and then I can tailor up. Because when I speak, I go, you know, it always works out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, that's how I feel. I feel like it always works out the way I want it to, or the way it's supposed to, right? Like, where I get a laugh or two here, and it's always like me improving something versus like setting up the joke. How much of getting, like, because I think getting laughter is important, right? Like, it's endearing a lot, you know? Like, you get your sad piece and you're pulling at people's emotions either way. How much of it is like planned versus improvised?
Right. Like, and that's a great question. And I think it works out for you because you're a natural communicator. You like to talk, you like to engage with people. I think for
that's
some
high people, praise coming for you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks, man.
But, you know, I think that there's always a balance, and it's kind of the yin and the yang, the feng shui of speaking is, you know, how much do you rehearse and how much do you improvise? And I think that part of it is just being self-aware and knowing your strengths and knowing how you like to communicate. Because, you know, if you're somebody who's incredibly nervous, who is going to have sweaty palms when you get up there, whose voice is going to shake, you might want to have that script that you follow, that you just know, hey, I am comfortable because I'm prepared. And if you go step by step, you know, you're not going to just fall apart and just wish that you wouldn't have been the person in front of the group. I would say, you know, if you're someone like you and someone like me, I do this quite a bit, is I just love to be in front of people. I love to talk. I love to engage with people. And a part of it is, you know, that back and forth that can happen. And, you know, if I have a group of 3,000 people that I'm speaking to, it's a little bit harder to, you know, just take something that the audience responded to and run with it, you know. But, you know, if it's a smaller group, I love to do that. So I think that answer varies, and it depends on your own self-awareness of what are you comfortable with, what do you enjoy, what's authentic to you, what's going to make you feel genuine about how you're presenting. Right. And I think if you're presenting in an authentic, genuine way, if you've really thought about how to engage your audience, it hopefully shouldn't matter which direction you choose to go, whether incredibly rehearsed or pretty off the cuff. You know, if you've really thought about who you are, who the audience is, how you are going to use your strengths to engage them well, I think both of them could work pretty well.
No one could have said that better. I appreciate that. So tell me this then. Now we've jumped ahead 3 miles. Come back. Yeah. Come back with me a sec. Now, how did you get your career in speaking off? Like you're landed now. How did you start to begin to take off? Walk me through that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. I started like a lot of young college students start. I started as an intern. And I interned at a...
Get me coffee.
Right. I know people were making me cold call quite a bit. And, you know, it was... I loved my internship, so that was not a diss on the people that I interned with.
No, fuck. Interns, you're supposed to intern.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like...
Absolutely. You got to pay your dues. And sometimes you pay them twice. But I interned at a leadership development company. And throughout my whole internship in college, I kind of said... Give me a shot. I would love to do what you're doing. And they were really gracious about it. They gave me some good opportunities to get in front of people, to run some workshops. They taught me really how to be an engaging speaker and kind of have that roller coaster of exciting and engaging content and research. Exciting and engaging, and you kind of bring people up and down so that they stay engaged, but they also learn along the way. And so I interned with them. When I graduated college, I had been writing quite a bit. I presented them with a manuscript for a book I was working on. And to my surprise, they said, "We would love to publish this." So,
oh, no way.
You know, a lot of authors go through this huge, long publication process that is arduous and tiresome. And I did not have that experience. I went to this leadership development company that I already had a relationship with. They published my first book. They put me on the road as a speaker. I spoke in 45 different states. I traveled around the country for 2.5 years just teaching people about leadership, about personal growth, about team building and effective communication styles. And I started to learn both that I could do this, that it was necessary in the world, that I think people really need somebody to help them with some of these things and to deliver these messages to help people grow. But I also started learning that I had this entrepreneurial itch that I just needed to scratch.
Gotta scratch that itch.
Yeah. So
that is the worst bug bite you can get in life,
yep,
I believe.
Yep. And it's going to be a very exciting and fun journey, but it's also going to be a journey that leads you into words like patience and growth and these
or
things.
Bleeding through your eyes.
Right. You know all about that.
Absolutely.
So I left the company to join a marketing startup. I was the first employee. We did well. We built it into a $1 million startup. It was exciting. But it also just wasn't the right fit for me. I wasn't doing the work I was passionate about. And I feel like day in and day out, that became pretty clear. So I ended up getting fired from the startup.
You got to get fired.
All entrepreneurs have to be fired at some point. And so I got fired. And about 4 days later, I just said, I was passionate about speaking. I was passionate about writing. I wanted to help build people up. I wanted to help them live more purpose-filled lives. And so I launched my company, Action Packed Leadership. I published my second book on my own, which is called The Thinking Dilemma.
We'll link that up. You got to send me a link. We'll link that up in the show notes too.
Yeah, sounds good. And it's really a quick read. It's meant to really for the Snapchat generation to help them avoid distractions, figure out how to live a life with intentionality and purpose. And so if you're out there looking to just get a very quick punch in the gut when it comes to leadership and intentionality, it would be a good read. From there, I just started booking my own speaking gigs. I started running my own workshops, building my own content. I came out with my online leadership course at the start of 2017. And now, like I said, you know, in the next month, I think I'm speaking in 5 or 6 different states in the next 20 days or so. And
whoa.
So it's going to be a busy month, but it's everything you ask for when you get that entrepreneurial itch, you scratch it and then things start to work out.
I'm telling you. So, okay. So unpack this for me a little bit. So I think about the one thing. So what, you're 28, 29?
28. Yep.
Okay. 28. So you're a year younger than me. You have a shit ton of experience, which I believe. And tell me how you prove to someone that you're a thought leader on a topic, or in your instance, like leadership, right? Like, why would someone believe that Jeremy's a legit CEO because he runs this little fucking organization with 4 employees and he just walks around and has this podcast, right? Like, I can be a podcaster, or I can actually show someone that I'm doing it and then distribute it and everything else. Maybe that's a sign that says, hey, this guy knows what he's talking about. How do you establish yourself as like a thought leader on leadership, so to speak?
That's a great question. And this is where I get most passionate. And maybe this could be your little soundbite of this entire podcast.
I'm soundbiting the shit out of this.
Right. The way that you become a thought leader, the way that you become an entrepreneur, the way that you really build your dreams and your goals is you do it. You just do it. You go for it. You make it happen. You take action. You start. All of these synonyms are saying the same thing, is you just go. And I think so many people want to learn how to build an online course. But the people who are making the most money on online courses are teaching all of them how to build online courses.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. You know, people, when I was 22 and my first book got published, asked me, well, what gives you the authority to write a book? And the fact is, I did it. And people saw value in it, and the company that published it thought that it was good enough to be out there in the world. And I just think that more and more people are taking small, tiny, tiny, tiny baby steps, or they're taking no steps at all because they're stuck in the thought process and they don't ever bring their thoughts to life through their actions.
Oh my God. Yeah, fuck baby steps.
You know what right. I
mean? Like, or procrastination. It's like the same thing I tell people over and over and over again. And this is why I'm such a fan of you, which is the first time we talked, you're like intentionality. And I want you to go into that a little bit. So like when you start your day off, you start your day off with intentionality.
Right.
Walk me through that.
Yeah. I mean, every day just it's immediate. When I wake up, I know I want to wake up in the right way. And I've just mapped out what a morning looks like for me. And so every single morning, I wake up, I practice Spanish for 10 minutes, I drink one whole glass of water, I read the Bible for 15 minutes, I drink 2 more glasses of water, I work out, and then I get in the shower and I get all ready for my day. And I just feel like just knowing that exact step-by-step process of how my day is going to start and what's really going to get it off to the a positive start, that type of start to my day is just the most exciting. You know, I know that my day is going to follow in, you know, a mindful, really
sure.
grateful type of way, because I just started the day off in that type of intentional way.
I love that. It's like, is there any difference than, so I like to start my day off with a nice little smoothie, you know,
nice.
Like I know it, that if I put fucking spinach and I put blueberries and I put all these things that I know are healthy for me with intent, right? That's the intention. I'm trying to like dovetail and what something I can deliver. So like, intentionally. Because most of my day gets fucked up from there, right? Like, how do you keep it to where you're on that one avenue of intentionality? After my smoothie, I feel like my day is just completely, putting out fire. I'm a fireman.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, everyone's just this didn't happen. This didn't. And I'm like, oh my God, I started the day off with a smoothie, but I thought it was going to be great.
Right.
And now it's not. Like, how do you make sure that the rest of your day lines up with the start?
That's a great question. And there's tons of different frameworks of thought when it comes to just building out the perfect day. So again, I'll say a couple things, but again, I think it's about being self-aware and knowing what works for you and what doesn't work for you. Some
sure.
people will say, check your emails right when you get up. Some people will say, don't check your emails until the afternoon. And people will pick and choose studies that will justify whichever direction they're telling you to go.
Right.
So I would just say that, you know, once you're self-aware, once you know who you are and what helps you jive the best with an intentional day, I would say start to build a schedule around that. What does it look like? Because you have guys like Gary Vaynerchuk who are telling you to work 100 hours a week. And then you have guys like Tim Ferriss who are telling you to automate everything and work 0 hours a week. Mm-hmm. And I think that both of them are right. I think that entrepreneurs tend to not work hard enough because they go home and they watch Netflix and binge watch Stranger Things. But then
that's coming out this Friday. Well, when this is recorded, that's coming out this Friday.
Yeah. So yeah. Exciting. But there are also, you know, people who just say, look, my family is more important to me than building a business, or, mm-hmm. you know, my faith. And so I'm never going to work on Sundays. You know, those types of things are just about being self-aware and knowing what in your life are the highest priority items. So I'd also give you one word. If you out there, not just you, Jeremy, but also like the people listening to this podcast, if you are someone who feels like they're just putting out fires throughout every single day, if you feel like you're the person who's just handling all of the urgent requests at your company, in your job, in your life, I would give you one word, and that word is focus. Mm-hmm. Because in 27...
Let's pause right there.
Yeah.
Go back, hit the 15-second back, the 30-second back. You gotta listen to this. That's perfect. Okay, go, continue.
Yeah, in 2017, the hugest thing that's keeping people from living a life of intentionality is distractions. And we have things distracting us on a daily basis. It can be social media, it can be other technology, it can be other people. If you're in a co-working environment and you're trying to jam on something and get it done, and someone comes up and says, how was your weekend? You have immediately lost focus. And there are studies out there that say once you've lost it, it can take somewhere between 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes to really get back into that zone you were in before you lost that focus. And so I really think shutting your phone off, putting it on do not disturb, Xing out of your email and saying, I am going for the next hour of my life, I'm going to focus in on what I need to get done. And if something urgent comes up, I'm not going to know about it because I've shut my phone off. I've turned my email off. I've hopefully found a space where people aren't interjecting every 2 minutes. And those people, you know, typically get more done before noon than the people who are working all day but spending half of it on Facebook.
Yeah, I know. I know for a fact. You're so right. And I know for a fact because it's my own like attitude. It's my own propensity to work my ass off. Like, I love doing these in the morning. I feel like I'm on in the morning. Mm-hmm. I feel like the way my office sits with the sun, it's great, right? Like, it's just something. I know I get more done before like noon. No one wants to like really sit in a meeting with me at 2:30.
Right.
You know, like it's not for caffeine's sake or hope's sake or whatever else. It's just like, I wish I could just take a nap from 2:30 to like 5, then I get really productive again at like 5:30, and I start working my ass off again until like 1.
Well, and like, here's a little interesting tidbit for you too. They say that in America, naps are typically frowned upon, and the reason is because we have this culture of hard work, of going harder, doing more, putting more time and energy and effort in. In Japan, so just a cultural difference. Naps are seen as something that the hardworking person does so that they can then go be re-energized and work even harder. So,
oh man, that's amazing.
If you see someone napping in a park here, you think they're lazy.
Right.
If you see someone napping in a park in Japan, you think, wow, that person is a hard worker. And it's amazing because just that cultural difference, just provides just a huge perspective shift on, you know, what re-energizing looks like, what taking a nap looks like, what it can do. It, again, self-awareness. If you, Jeremy, are self-aware enough to know that from 2 to 5, you're going to take a nap, and then from 5 to 7, you're going to be the most productive human in the world, I would advocate for you to do that every single day.
I love it. Okay, fine. On your authority.
On my authority, you are allowed to take naps at least 2 hours a day.
Okay. That's what I, dude, I don't mind. And I always tell my fiance this. I say, listen, I go to bed at like 2. I'll wake up at like 6 or 7 and I'll get like 4 or 5 hours of sleep. What I would love is like a 2 hour nap in the afternoon, right? Like I still getting my 7 hours, right? Like, but right. I'm getting like a full cycle of sleep in the afternoon as well to that one that I like, I maybe missed overnight.
Right. And, hey, and if that works for you, then that works for you. That's great.
I know you're right. You know what? I'm dubbing myself officially self-aware.
You have become self-aware based on this podcast. So if anyone listens in, you can just listen to this podcast, become 100% self-aware, and you will you'll never have any unhappiness in your life again.
Gary, this conversation would make Gary Vee very happy, right?
Right. I think like, so.
We've found what it become like. We should say right now on this episode, we should, if you know you take naps, you're officially self-aware. Like if you know, napping is the key to self-awareness.
Right. Unless, of course, you take that nap, you get up, it didn't do anything for your happiness, your outlook on your day. It doesn't make you more productive. It doesn't help you work smarter instead of harder. If a nap is just a nap because you're bored and you've eaten too many potato chips, well, then I'm not an advocate for the nap.
But then you know, right? At least you're right. But then you know, now you're still self-aware because now you know like, hey, okay, napping doesn't make me more efficient, right? So like, so now you are absolutely aware that that doesn't work for you. And right. Aren't you in that regard self-aware?
I believe so. Well, and hopefully this podcast, just listening to us talk about self-awareness, no pun intended, helps wake people up.
Whoa!
And it helps people get out of that zone of just floating through their day. Because I think too many people, the intentionality piece of it all is simply that you're trying. And I think that the most successful people in the world are have this, again, it's just this back and forth. And there's two things that just make them so successful. And one piece of it is just being content and grateful and know that you have everything you need to be happy, to love others well, to build this life that you want to live. And that's a mindfulness thing. That's just in your own head. But at the same time as being content and grateful is to also be ambitious and to want to grow and to want to push and to want to get better. And it's very, very, very difficult. And from a human perspective, sometimes it doesn't make sense to say, how can I be content and ambitious? How can I be grateful and want to grow and want to thrive and want to have more? And I think when people can start to figure that out of I'm fully content, I'm fully grateful, I have everything I need, but just as a piece of being human, I also want to be ambitious, I want to grow, I want to get better, I want to learn. Those two things just simultaneously being ingrained in your life will really help you to kind of be intentional and help you grow and help you be that person that you want to be.
Oh, dude, you are all welcome for that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Do you use that as a, dude, I'm looking at your name here on this, in this chat thing that we got. And I go, oh my God, that's the greatest pun. That's the punniest name I've ever heard.
Yeah, I had
you
a.
You are welcome.
I
oh
had
my
a high
God.
School teacher named Mr. Bauer, and one day I said, "Hey, thank you for letting me Bauer your calculator."
Oh my!
And the first time—that's the first time anyone has ever said "You're welcome" to me.
No, it's not.
He responded. He said, "You're welcome," and I had nothing to say. I was silenced.
He mic dropped you back.
He did. He did. I thought I got him. He got me.
Oh, wow. He got the last word on you.
I know. Oh, usually physics teachers usually aren't that quick, but...
Oh, they're not.
Yeah.
They're held down by gravity.
Right. But the gravity makes the mic drop faster, so I've heard.
Oh, fucking gold. This is all gold. Okay. Now, although I'd love to end on that, I want a little advice for me. I'm going to take this personally. So... I think we talked a little bit last about how I trademarked BLAST, right? Mm-hmm. BLAST, body language and small talk. And I've run a couple seminars locally for those people who want to get involved with like public speaking, or, oh, I've got this seminar or this webinar that I want to start. What is, just give us a few, just a couple tips, or give me a couple tips on how I get my body language and small talk, BLAST, TM, out there. And how would I begin to put it in different markets? How would I start that?
Well, you're ahead of the game. You already have your brand started, like figure it out. But if you were really starting from square one, I would say first define the message that you want to send. If you're someone who wants to do body language and small talk, that's an effective communication style seminar, you know. What messages mm-hmm. are you truly sending, and start to create a brand around that. So if you have a bullet pointed list of what you're trying to get across to people when they encounter you, that's kind of the first goal of, this is what I'm an expert in. These are the messages I want to send. I think from there, you start to define in what capacity are you delivering these messages? Because for me, I know that there's four areas. It's keynote speeches, interactive workshops, my books, and my online courses. And if you define exactly in what capacity I want to deliver these messages, so for you, if it's BLAST, you want to do seminars, you want to deliver these workshops, you want to do a half day or full day trainings, that's great. You've defined your message, you've defined what capacity you're delivering your message through. And then from there, I think you start to define your market. So who is your perfect customer? Who really wants what you have? Who needs help with these messages and also knows that they need help with these messages? And a question that a lot of people don't typically ask, but who has the budget to actually support bringing you in or purchasing your resources to take themselves or their group through the training that or the offering that you provide? So you've defined your message, you've defined the platform in which you're delivering your message, you define your market, and then you just have to go. You're going to learn more from feedback than you ever are from just ruminating on what you're building. So you have to try to sell it, get it to the people in your market. If you think your market is high schools, you know, go get a list of high school principals and send them a short email and say, hey, do you ever purchase online leadership courses? Or do you ever bring in someone to run a seminar? And just ask questions and get feedback from real people. Because I think people spend too much time just in that phase where they're like, well, once I have it perfect, then I'll try to sell it. And then they never sell it. And I think you need to, as quickly mm-hmm. as possible, get to the minimum viable product, the least thing that you could sell, and then try to sell it and see what people say. If your audience is in the corporate world, you know, reach out to heads of HR and see if they need more training for their employees on, you know, body language and small talk, on effective communication.
That's a good strategy, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I just think it's what are the lists of people, who can I reach out to immediately to validate that what I'm doing is wanted, is needed, with the messaging that I've chosen, with the platform that I've chosen. Reach out to these people, start a conversation, get great feedback, and, you know, from there, if you start to prove that your product really fits the market that you've chosen, then you can try to scale it and expand and do all those things entrepreneurs do, and, you know, email drip campaigns and Facebook marketing and all those things. But I'd say if you're just trying to get off the ground, choose your message, choose your platform, choose your market, and try to sell.
Boom. Okay. We have such great advice. We have to be respectful of his time. He is Kyle Wilcom, correct?
Yep, Kyle Wilcom,
You are welcome.
Yes, that's the thing that people are going to remember.
That's the soundbite right there.
Right.
Okay, thanks so much for coming on, Kyle.
Thank you for having me. It's been a great time.
All right, talk to you later.